Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. Wanted to go over a story from CNBC today talking about one of my favorite commodities, coal. They've got a little bit different view on it than I do, to say the least. And I want to go over that view and tell you why this makes me even more bullish on what is deemed uninvestable. So let's dive right into it here. So we're going to go over to the CNBC post from today. It says, coal's a stupid investment, and we are sleepwalking to climate catastrophe, says UN Chief Gutierrez. So if you're not familiar with this guy, in fact, as soon as I show you his picture, I'm sure you'll recognize him. And he's got his little pin. He's got his pin for the globe, and he's got his pin here, just virtue signaling that he's a part of this, I don't know, 1.5 Celsius thing, for climate change. But if you don't recognize this gentleman, he is one of the main figures at the World Economic Forum. And whenever they do a Davos type of meeting, he's always out there talking with Klaus and with that other gal from the IMF, Georgikova, I think is her name. I'm terrible with names, but I always remember her last name because it's obviously George in it. So that helps me out a little bit. But let's get into the key points. In a speech broadcast Monday, the UN Secretary General says addiction to fossil fuels is mutually assured destruction. And what's really amazing about what he says throughout this article is it very much reminds me of what the quote-unquote professionals were saying about the Cerveza sickness. When you would hear them talk, they would just contradict themselves within the same paragraph. And it just, like, if you contradict yourself that many times, it seems like you don't know what you're talking about. But I'll let you be the judge. Antonio Gutierrez comments came at a time when several major economies, including European Union, are trying to find ways to reduce their reliance on Russian hydrocarbons. So why are they doing this? Well, because natural gas prices have spiked, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. They have spiked to levels where people in Germany, as an example, have a hard time paying the price to heat their home. So of course, you would want to not rely on Russian hydrocarbons. But here's the irony. Is if Gutierrez had his way and we just rapidly moved to, let's just say, generating electricity without hydrocarbons, so just with wind and solar as an example, that the price of energy would rise even greater than it is by Russia potentially cutting off the supply of natural gas to Europe. And so he would exacerbate the problem. Now for him, that doesn't matter. And the global elite, they don't care. Because throughout this whole article, you'll notice that he's hyper-focused on climate change. And okay, that's fine. Totally, I get that. But as Thomas Sowell teaches us, there are no solutions. There are only trade-offs. So I think it's great to be concerned about climate change. I think that's something that we should be talking about, but we have to talk about it through the lens of understanding that there will be trade-offs. This is a cost-benefit analysis. So if you, let's say, move quickly to his little 1.5 virtue signal pin, or to a world where he is where the global elite are achieving their climate change objectives, let's just say, that is a world where the price to heat your home or the energy price will be much, much higher if we move there as quickly as they want to move there. This guy's talking about reducing carbon emissions globally by 40% by 2030. So in that world, you've got two options. Either millions and millions of poor people die because they can't afford energy. I guess you've got an and or. And the price of that energy just goes to astronomical levels. And if you want to go down that rabbit hole, maybe that's their objective at the end of the day, right? Maybe it is their objective to increase energy prices so high where the poor people can't afford the energy And then what happens to the poor people? Well, let me just put it this way. The population goes down, not up, in that world. And again, I don't want to go down the conspiracy path, but who knows? Maybe that's their objective here. But let's just assume for the moment that that isn't their objective, and they're just incredibly, incredibly naive, right? Going back to the cost-benefit analysis and the trade-off. Because you can be someone that says, George, listen, climate change is a real issue. It's something we have to consider. Okay, fine. I totally get that. This is a conversation I had with my good friend, Art Berman, who is, you know, he's very concerned about climate change as a geologist. And but we had this back and forth on the last time I interviewed Art. And, you know, we were talking about the costs and the benefits, and we were talking about the trade-offs involved, right? And you have to understand that if you say we have to move towards reducing global temperature by 1.5 degrees, I think that's kind of what this pin is talking about. But if you say we have to hit XYZ climate change objective, okay, that's fine. But then you have to say, okay, at what cost? I mean, we could easily hit any climate change objective you want, but it would kill a billion people. So I don't know if that's worth the trade-off. But see, that's the discussion we have to have. And it's the discussion that the climate change folks don't want to have. They want to look at climate change as a panacea or these climate change objectives. They want to look at it as though we can achieve these objectives with no cost whatsoever. And this is why I get really pissed off at these global elite like Gutierrez, because they know better. They know damn well that if we achieve these objectives they want to achieve, that you are going to increase energy prices to astronomical levels. And we can see this playing out right now in Western Europe. So starting off here, UN Secretary, we talked about this guy saying the planet had emerged from last year's COP26 summit in Glasgow, a certain naive optimism. We are sleepwalking to economic catastrophe, to climate catastrophe. In remarks delivered by the Economist's Sustainability Week via video link, Gutierrez sketched out a picture of where he felt the world stood when it came to tackling global warming. He noted that while COP26 had seen positive developments related to issues such as cutting methane, tackling deforestation, and mobilizing private finance, a significant challenge has remained. Keeping 1.5 alive requires a 45% reduction in global emissions by 2030. So again, you may say, well, this is an admirable goal. I'd say, okay, fine. But at what cost, right? And we have to understand that we could achieve that goal, but you're going to kill hundreds of millions of people, if not a billion, maybe more people. I don't know if that's a good trade-off. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. I would argue that it's not, but that's the discussion that we need to have. There are no solutions here, just trade-offs. He said the problem was not solved in Glasgow. Well, just FYI, Mr. Global Elite guy, you are not going to solve the problem. The global elite are not going to solve the problem. You can't do anything. All you are is just a talking head that just comes out and pontificates. You work for the UN, for heaven's sakes. What do you do? If this problem is going to be solved, it's going to be entrepreneurs. It's going to be a decentralized type of approach. And see, that's what they hate. They hate that because they want this to be solved by a top-down central planning type of game plan. And because they believe that they're smarter than everyone else. So Gutierrez references 1.5 relates to Paris Agreement target of limiting global warming to well below 2, preferably 1.5 degrees Celsius compared to pre-industrial levels. This is just such a great example of the mentality of the global elite. You know, I could go off on a lot of different tangents here, but it really reminds me of that video that we did the other day of, I think the guy's name is Harari, Noah Harari, where he was talking about how human beings can take control of the evolutionary process by, genetically recoding and basically playing God here. And I think that's kind of the underlying belief of the global elite, is they they actually see themselves as godlike figures. And the reason I say that pretty much without hesitation is because look at to believe that human beings could actually control global temperatures to the degree that we would say, okay, well, let's try to just turn the dial to about 2, but actually let's try to turn the dial a couple more notches towards just 1.5. I mean, we as to even think that we as human beings have that much control to where we could micromanage the environment to where we could just, let's just change that dial to about 1.5. Yeah, you know, 1.6, 1.7, yeah, that's okay, but let's just take it down a couple notches to 1.5. I mean, to believe that we could even do that, just the arrogance, you have to believe that you're I hate to say a God type figure, but you guys know what I'm referring to. They believe that they can play God. They believe that human beings can control these things. And unfortunately, as most of you know on this live stream, when human beings try to play that game, it ends very, very poorly. And I think that this will end very, very poorly as well. I mean, we can see this coming to fruition in places like Western Europe, where the nat gas price has gone through the roof. Energy prices have gone through the roof. Look at what's happening in the United States with gas prices. I mean, okay, so the more you try to transition onto an alternate source of energy that is less dense, the more the prices are going to go up because the demand is going to be the same. People don't understand that the demand for fossil fuels is going to remain the same. It might go down slightly, but throughout human history, we have never moved to an alternate source of energy where the prior energy source is used less often. Right, so let's go back 200 or 300 years where the main source of energy was lumber. We use more lumber today than we used back then. So whether it's lumber, whether it's coal, moving to oil, whatever we move on to, we always move to a more dense energy source. And number two, even those energy sources that we were using, demand doesn't go down, it goes up because the population increases. And if the population increases exponentially, the demand for energy increases exponentially as well, which goes back to that earlier conspiracy theory, if you want to call it that the global elite know this, and the two levers that they are choosing to focus on is either using far less energy or having the population of the world reduced. Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macro economics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out of control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow Rebel Capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level. Now, my solution to that problem would be, well, let's reduce regulations. Let's let the market handle this. You know, this is, again, one thing the global elites, they cannot accept this to be true, because if this was true, then their whole worldview would have to change. This worldview that they are somehow godlike figures, well, that would have to change, because the solution I'm referring to is a decentralized approach. It's understanding that as the population grows exponentially, so are the amount of scientists or entrepreneurs or a combination of both that can tackle and solve this problem. But you see, if the global elite like Gutierrez or Klaus came out and said, oh, well, we need to find a market solution to this. Let's decentralize. Let's forget this top-down type of approach. Let's look at a bottoms-up approach and let the population, let society handle this. You know, then they would have to admit that there are people in society that are smarter than they are. And that's what they can't handle, because in their minds, in their worldview, the global elite are the intelligentsia. They are superior. Now, some of them may feel as though they're genetically superior, but they are superior to everyone else. That's why they're the global elite. They're the chosen few for a reason, because they're just smarter than everyone else, and they're the people that have had this epiphany, right? They're the enlightened few, and therefore, they're the ones that should dictate to all the other plebs as to how society works. But just think, think about that. If you have that view, how could you say, okay, we've got this huge problem like global warming or the population increasing exponentially and the amount of energy, we can't increase it exponentially. How would you, if you viewed yourself like a pharaoh or a king or something like that, then how could you say that I can't solve this problem? The plebs have to solve this problem. And really, that's what it boils down to. So moving on down the article here, according to present national commitments, global emissions are set to increase by almost 14% in the 2020s, he said, a far cry from his 45% decrease. Last year alone, global energy-related CO2 emissions grew by 6% to their highest levels in history. Coal emissions have surged to record levels. We are sleepwalking to climate catastrophe. So why is that? Why has global demand for fossil fuels, therefore emissions, why has it gone up? Are people just bad? Are they evil? Do they just want to destroy the planet? Do they just not care? Well, I wish what I could do is take this computer and go over to my other room where I could show you a bird's eye view of the street here in Colombia, in Medellin, Colombia. And what you'll see are a few cars drive by, but you'll see a lot of motorcycles, and they're cheap motorcycles because most people here in Colombia, they cannot afford a car. They couldn't, there's no way they could afford an electric motorcycle. They couldn't afford to power the electric motorcycle. And therefore, the only means of transportation they have to support themselves, to go to their job, to take their family to take their kid to the school, is just on a super, super cheap motorcycle that's powered by super, super, super cheap fossil fuel. So what I'd like Mr. Gutierrez to do is I'd like him to go out to the street right here in front of my apartment and talk to those poor Colombians that are driving by in the motorcycle and tell them that they shouldn't drive their motorcycle anymore, that they should go buy a Tesla to drive their kid back and forth to school, that they should go over to their little shanty that they live in on the side of the hill, and they should try to install solar panels. I mean, you see what I'm saying? This is the insanity that we're dealing with. And and this is why I get one of the reasons why I get so pissed off at the global elite. Because they sit there in their ivory tower and preach down to the rest of us. And they totally ignore or don't even care about that poor guy that's just trying to survive and doing so in any way he possibly can. And the only way he can provide for his family, the only way he can survive, is if he has a really super cheap motorcycle that can run on super cheap energy. So by taking that away from him, you're potentially giving him and his family a death sentence. But you see, the Klaus types don't care about that. As long as they achieve their 1.5 objective. And you see, this goes into the discussion of trade-offs that we have to have. So if you're someone that says, yes, we need to get, we need to reduce global carbon emissions by 45% by 2030 at any cost. Well, then what I'd like you to do is come down here to Columbia and we can invite 20 or 30 or 50 or 100 or a million of these poor Colombians that to where their life quite literally depends on those cheap fossil fuels. And I'd like you to explain to them why they need to die and see how that goes over. See, and you say, well, George, you're being dramatic. No, I'm not. If you actually studied how fossil fuels work and how energy is the economy, you would realize that this is what we're dealing with here. So you're trying to find a very, very simple question or a simple answer to a very, very complex question. And again, I'm not to say that this isn't an admirable goal, but you have to realize that there's going to be some heavy, heavy costs to pay, and that people that say that we should attain these goals at any cost are the people that don't have to pay the price, like these poor Colombians driving around on their motorcycles. And I think that those people should have just as much of a voice, if not more, than these global elite when we're trying to have a discussion of what to do with energy here in the 2020s. Yeah, and see where he says that we're sleepwalking to climate catastrophe. Okay, Mr. Gutierrez, what you are doing is you are sleepwalking to economic catastrophe. And the thing that really pisses me off is you know that damn well. So I shouldn't use the word sleepwalking. You are pretending to sleepwalk towards economic catastrophe that will kill hundreds of millions of people like these Colombians driving by on their cheap motorcycles. You're doing it intent. You're pretending to sleepwalk, but you know exactly what you're doing. So he goes on to say, on Russia's invasion of Ukraine, wide-ranging effects this could have, Gutierrez offered up equally stark assessment. He said that the fallout from Russian war on Ukraine risks upending global food and energy markets. Why? See, this is where he starts to contradict himself. Just like they did with the Cerveza sickness. So think about that. He's saying, look, the fallout from the war with Russia and Ukraine is upending global food and energy markets, meaning the prices are skyrocketing, with major implications for global climate agenda. Okay, so you can't see that by reducing carbon emissions by 45% by 2030, you can't understand that it's going to have the exact same effect, if not worse, as far as upending global food and energy markets, meaning the price of food is going to skyrocket, the price of energy that we have to have where there's very inelastic demand. Those prices are going to skyrocket. The price for the guy, let's go back to the motorcycle guy, his price of energy is going to skyrocket. The price of the food that where he's trying to feed his family, that's going to skyrocket. I mean, you know, but they just don't, that's the bottom line, is they just don't care. They don't care about, because he can afford the prices. I mean, he's got a private jet. He doesn't care if the price of his jet fuel doubles. See, that doesn't matter to him. But if the price of fuel for the motorcycle doubles, that matters to that person because that's a matter of life and death. He says countries could become so consumed by the immediate fossil fuel supply gap that they neglect or kneecap policies to cut fossil fuel use. And this is madness. See, again, he's not acknowledging that this is life or death to billions of people in the world. That's what he just refuses to acknowledge, that you're the immediate, so countries could become so consumed by immediate fuel. Okay, let's rephrase that in a way. He's saying countries could become so consumed by immediate fossil fuel supply gaps, meaning countries could become so consumed by the price of energy and food skyrocketing to where poor people can't afford the energy and food that they could neglect policies meant to cut the use of fossil fuel or reduce prices for said energy and said fuel. And he's saying this is madness. Well, of course, it's madness to someone who can afford the price increases. It's not madness to the people that are going to starve to death. And then all my other, it looks like my, for some reason, my highlights got deleted. But you guys get it. This is actually the whole point I was trying to make with the video is to say from an investment standpoint, I just, you can tell I get riled up with the kind of the ethics that are involved here or kind of the just how these global elite ignore all the poor and the middle class. That really gets under my skin, as you can see. But one of the main things I wanted to go over with this video is to point out that if you are setting up a watch list for things that could be good investments in the future, I would definitely add coal. And when you start to see headlines like this, that coal is a stupid investment, what that means is there's going to be less money investing in coal. Therefore, less money to create more supply, less capital expenditures to increase the supply of coal moving forward. Therefore, if you're on a limited supply and demand is not going to go down that much, then the price only has one thing to do, and that's go up. Now, I'm not saying buy coal right now. The price has really run, but it's one of my top commodities on my watch list, that's for sure. And I think coal is really in the same position of tobacco in the 1990s, where that was uninvestable. And the tobacco industry has been one of the top performers, if not the top performer, in the stock market since that time. Going back to the book I was talking about with Jim Rogers that I listened to a couple weekends ago called Hot Commodities. One of his favorite at the time, this was 2004, was lead. And if any of you are my age, I'm sure you remember the vilification of lead, and maybe rightfully so, but what happened to the price as a result of no one investing in lead? Because just like they're saying today that coal is a stupid investment, back then they were saying the exact same thing about lead, and the price skyrocketed. And it went from, I remember, about $400 or $500 per ton in 2004 when Jim was talking about it. About two or three years later, if you look at a chart, it was at $3,500 per ton. Why? Because it was, quote unquote, uninvestable. And again, I think we could see the same thing here with coal. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. We'll see you in the next video.